Welcome to the Men on Purpose podcast, featuring dynamic conversations with emerging and established visionary men on purpose. Thanks for joining us today as we celebrate the men on purpose who are committed, creative, courageous change makers all around the world. Now, here's the host of Men on Purpose, Emerald Greenforest.
Welcome to another episode of the Men on Purpose podcast, where we celebrate men on purpose and provide our listeners with wisdom and immediately actionable steps to be more purposeful, powerful, and positive in their impact and their leadership. This is your host, Emerald Greenforest, and today we have with us our very special guest, Norm Lavolette. Norm is the co-founder and CEO of Boston Comedy Institutions, Improv Asylum, and Laugh Boston. He has been working in comedy and entertainment for over 20 years, performing, directing, or producing over 10,000 shows and workshops from Boston to Beijing. He is the author of the new book from Wiley called The Art of Making Shit Up, where he explores his career in comedy and improv and how the same techniques used on stage can help people achieve far more than they ever thought they could, both professionally and personally. And I had the pleasure of meeting Norm in person at the National Publicity Summit just a few weeks ago that was held in New York City. And he was one of the few. I was pitched for about 3.5 hours. And he was one of the few that I said right away, oh yes, I would like you to be on the show. So welcome, Norm. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Emerald. And when you say it like that, when you read the credits, it sounds so much more impressive. And when you read them, you're like, what am I writing? And then when somebody else reads it, like, hey, who is that guy? That's pretty good. So you sound really nice. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Well, you are pretty awesome. And that's one of the reasons I selected you to be on the show, because I really felt like you had some street cred and you definitely had something that I felt that you could really offer to our audience. So I'd love to have you talk a little bit about your own calling. Like, sure. You've been in the entertainment business for a number of years. Was there like a specific moment where you said, oh my God, this is who I am, this is what I have to be? Or like, did you grow up from the time you were tiny being the family clown or the class comedian or something like that? Tell us your backstory on how you got called to where you are today.
I was, you know, blessed because I had an incredibly funny mother and father. That is one of the things. And you would never predict that what I'm doing now with my companies and my career is where I would have come from. Though my parents were very funny, you know, I come from a small town, Grafton, Massachusetts, which is in central Massachusetts by Worcester. You know, my parents, you know, my father was a truck driver. My mother worked on the auto factory line. There's nothing in my background that would have ever said, oh, and you're going to go into comedy and you're going to build these companies. But what they were was they were funny. And I think you don't know it at the time, but as you look back on your life, you're like, well, I was surrounded by humor. I was surrounded by laughter. And it became very apparent that to have a seat at the table, you needed to be funny. And that's what was valued, you know, and especially as I think back on it, that was like their status, because they didn't have traditionally high status jobs. Neither of them, I think, got past the 9th grade in high school, and yet they could hold a room. Right. And it wasn't based on their education. It wasn't based on their income or anything like that. And I think I recognize that. So I always loved comedy and I was always around it. I think from a calling standpoint, even though I was a funny guy, I was a funny kid, no doubt about it. I don't know if I was a class clown in the typical sense, in like just doing stupid things all the time, but I was funny. I wasn't afraid to be funny. And I even think the teachers thought I was funny. I was that kid that at some point, you know, even the teachers would be laughing. But at some point, you got to throw me out because, you know, you got to get on with things. I got to teach class. I got to teach algebra. Nobody needs algebra. What do I need algebra for? But anyways, so I did those kind of things. But I think really when it clicked, when the gears started to come together was when I was at school. I went to UMass Amherst. And that's when I started to really notice and feel something different. Just even my sense of humor, I was now starting to be introduced as, you got to meet this guy. He's really funny, which was interesting because I'm like, well, I'm just being who I am. And yet there was enough of that in my mind, and having loved comedy and performance, where I was like, well, I don't know, this feels different. So I ended up starting my own crappy late night TV show at UMass called Beyond the Norm. It was terrible. It was great. I loved everything about it, but it's supposed to be terrible, right? And that's how you get started. I auditioned for the on-campus comedy troupe, Mission Improvable. I got into that. And I think very, very quickly, it clicked with me in the sense of like, this is something not only that I feel like I can do, but I feel like I kind of have to do.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. And I love that clarity around like, I can and I actually have to. Like, this is my contribution, right, sure, to the planet. Yeah. And we all need as much comedy as we can get. That is for sure.
I say it all the time. When things are going well, we want to laugh. When things are going terrible, we need to laugh. So, you know, you're always going to have humor. It's something that's there. So it's a nice industry to be a part of.
Beautiful. So what inspired you to then become a CEO? Because, you know, there's a big leap from being a performer, which requires an immense amount of commitment and practice and showing up and rehearsing and bombing and getting back up again and doing all the things, right? And then now to add to that, you know, creating your own company and doing, you know, something really amazing. Laugh Boston and Improv Asylum are nothing to sneeze at, Norm. So let's talk a little bit about what called you to take your craft to the next level and to create a company that served more people, both as, you know, serving more people to be able to be performers, but also be able to serve more audiences.
Yeah, I came up as a performer and I was doing shows. But the one thing that I kind of recognized very early on was whether I liked it or not, I was going to have to create anything that I wanted to create. I was going to have to make my own opportunities. And because I wanted to and I decided that I was going to make a life and a career in comedy, that's the thing that gave me the action point to say like, well, if I'm going to do this, then I'm going to have to do everything within my control to make it happen. You know, I was young. I don't necessarily know why I felt that way or knew those things, but I quickly recognized that there was not going to be a magic tap on my shoulder and I was not going to be invited to some kind of club. Those clubs are closed and they're not accepting any more members. And I think I recognized that very early on. And also, to be very honest, look, I know there's people that are more funny, more talented. There always are going to be. So I'm going to have to work harder. And I wanted to control my own destiny. So when we started and we started Improv Asylum, we said, well, hey, there at the time in Boston, there wasn't a professional improvisational and sketch comedy theater. So we're like, well, we should be the ones to try to do it, to take the steps to see if it can be done. And I always looked at it, even in the early part of my career, which is, I always say it, I didn't want to work. So I had to work very hard at avoiding hard work. I mean, you really do. So you have to really put the energy on the business side of it. So I really did that. And that's what paid off. And for us, there's a dual benefit there, right? The art benefits by having a really great platform to feel secure and build off of. Really great art, in this case, it's comedy, is awesome for the bottom line. So it's a mutually supportive environment, really. And so early on, I said, well, look, I know I'm going to have to work incredibly hard on the business side of it, because when you're doing these kind of things, that's your job. You're an independent contractor.
Beautiful. Well, and obviously you're creative. So can you give our guys who are listening all over the world some little clue or hint or immediately actionable step that they might be able to take to really activate and enhance their own creative power to, you know, make the life that works for them?
Sure. Everybody is creative, and I don't care what you think about yourself. I don't care what industry you're in. Hey, you can even be in insurance and you're creative, okay? We are. I think the thing that really holds us back is, and you learn this as a performer, but the thing that holds us back most is that negative self-talk of saying, number one, I can't do something. And then I think even more importantly, the self-consciousness of looking stupid in front of other people, right? That's what it is. And in this case, sure, for me, it's comedy, but it's almost anything that we want to do or try that is different. Right? It's, oh, I'm going to look stupid. Others are going to mock me. Others are going to think I'm an idiot for trying that. If it doesn't work, they're going to see, I told you so. And those are very real feelings. That's not in your head. It's easy to dismiss that. They're not in your head. Those are very real feelings. And yet, if you can get past those things, you're free. If you do not give a crap what others think about you. It's a really liberating thing. And what I talk about in terms of even trying to overcome some of that is, think of it this way, right? Most of us, we are horrible narcissists. All we do is really think about ourselves. That's what we do day in and day out. And when you realize that, when you realize that people just are not thinking about you as much or if at all like you think they are, oh, that's freeing. That's liberating. And so what I'd suggest is trying to put yourself in situations where you get used to maybe feeling a little, oh, do I feel stupid? Do I feel foolish? And pushing through it. Because when you do that, then it's like going to the gym, right? Then, oh, you get stronger. So for me, for instance, so at Improv Asylum, sure, we have performances, but we have a training center where you can, you know, we teach the art of improvisation. Look, 90% of the people that take classes at Improv Asylum, they're not looking to be professional comedians or improv comedians. That's not what they're looking to do. But they are looking to start to push through that fence, that wall that is holding them back. And it's those kind of classes. It doesn't matter if it's an improv class or an acting class or a singing lesson, but anything that puts you through that, because what happens is you'll do it. Doesn't matter if you do it well, that's not the point, but you'll get through it. All of a sudden you'll realize the world doesn't stop. Everybody doesn't think you're an idiot and you're that much stronger.
I love that. Do it and you'll get through it.
Yeah,
we have a new slogan for you, Norm.
I love it.
Do it and you'll get through it.
Love it.
Nice.
But it is so true. And it's that voice. And look, we all have it. And I have it too. It's not something that magically goes away. When I go on to do that next thing, when I had the opportunity presented to me to write a book, it's the same thing. I had to get through my own negative talk of like, oh, I mean, I've never written a book before. Is anybody going to want to really listen to what I have to say? And then I had to remember, that's not the point. That's not the point at all. You just create and you get through it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Awesome. So I want to talk about the book. And I want to ask you, so somebody came to you, approached you about that book. I was going to ask you, like, what was the creative process around the book itself? So you want to tell us a little bit about how you got chosen. It sounds like you got chosen or approached to write this book and said yes.
I did. And saying yes is really actually one of the key tenets and principles in improvisation. Because when people say, like, well, how do you teach improvisation? Aren't you just making up? Yes, we are. Yet there is a skill set that we're using to be able to manage and communicate. And there's this concept of yes, specifically yes and. And all yes and really means is, yes, I'm listening to you. I'm giving you my attention. And I'm also willing to build off of your idea. Right. And that's what it is. And so, you know, I was approached by Wiley, the publisher, about the book. And the reason that I was approached is because I've done, you know, a certain amount in the entertainment field and in the comedy field. And I think that's another lesson. If you do stuff, people will find you. People will come get you. Right. I see this and I know that you see this all the time. Right. Somebody maybe does one thing or almost nothing and they say, oh, I'm going to go tell everybody that they should talk to me. They should talk to me. That's one way to do it. And you can get that to work. But you know, it's a way better way. I think you talk about this a lot. Serve other people, create for other people. And oddly enough, somebody, you know, goes, I hear and see all the things you're saying in your workshops. Could you put that in the book? Mm. You know, and that's a better way to do it. And so Wiley approached me and they, you know, they basically were like, hey, would you ever consider writing a book? Me being a comedian, I'm looking at it going, are you suggesting you would publish anything that I would write? What are we talking about here? Sure. And so, you know, we kind of worked out and said, well, yeah, you know, I do have a lot of thoughts on both where I'm from and the creative process. And we said, sure, let's go get it and see what it is.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to tell you where you can find out more about Norm and his book, The Art of Making Shit Up. And right now, though, we're going to take a break. So I want to thank all of our listeners who are downloading, rating, and reviewing. We've already had thousands of downloads from all over the world. And let me see, I want to shout out this week definitely to the people in Boston, for sure. But I also want to, let's see, who else do we want to shout out to here, Norm? Let's shout out to the people in Belgium who are listening all around the world. Yeah. So shout out to Boston and Belgium today.
Yeah. Both B-towns.
B-towns. And we'll be right back with Norm Lavolette.
The Men on Purpose podcast is brought to you by the Creative Age Consulting Group. Men, are you ready to take the leap and go deep to discover the most meaningful mark you can make with your life? Is now the time to consciously craft the legacy life you want to lead? Are you already a legendary leader looking for your big what's next? Creative Age Consulting Group is hired to help men just like you to gain clarity, create consciously, and commit courageously. Please visit timetomakeyourmark.com to apply for an invitation-only consultation. Be sure to apply for a consultation today if you have been inspired to receive support in serving your purpose and making your most meaningful mark. Once again, that's timetomakeyourmark.com or click on the link in the show notes for access to the application.
And we are back with our special guest, Norm Lavalette, the CEO of Boston Comedy Institution's Improv Asylum and Laugh Boston. He is also the author of the new book, The Art of Making Shit Up. So you can find out more about Norm at improvasylum.com. We'll put that into the show notes and definitely take a look at, I'm guessing your book is on Amazon for sure.
That's correct.
Take a look at Amazon. Is the book available on its own website as well, the art of making shit up?
It is. Yes.
Okay, great. Correct. Great. So awesome. So if you're interested in the book, you want to go to that website. We'll put both of those into the show notes for everyone. So let's talk, Norm, about courage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because you were approached by Wiley. You are somebody who has the courage to jump on stage and do the funny, right? You're somebody who has the courage to say, raise your hand and say, I'll be the CEO for that. And now you've been asked to step into the role of author and authorship. There's all these roles, right, that we get to step into. We have the opportunity to step into in our life. Can you talk about the courage it takes and how you exercise your own courage muscle to just do it so you get through it?
I think it's important to remember that courage does not mean lack of fear. And I think a lot of people mistake that. Oh, you don't fear anything. No. That's not what courage is. Courage is the fact that we try things because we're afraid. Well, that's what courage is. If you're not afraid, it doesn't take any courage, right? You're not afraid to drive down to Dunkin' Donuts and get a coffee. That doesn't take courage. You know how to do that. So we all feel that. And I feel that as well. I think, though, when it comes to this ability to just jump on something and do it, it is something that you can start to teach yourself. You really can. It's the same thing as going to the gym. I even talk about taking an improv class. I call it a gym for the mind because that's what it is. And I think, you know, we often spend time going to the gym, working on our bodies, right? We eat healthy. We do those kind of things. What are we doing to work on our minds? It's great that, you know, there's meditation and there's mindfulness. That's great. And there's also ways where you need to be actively working on it. So, you know, that's something that I do and that I look at and I try to get myself into a position to say, hey, it's okay to fail. It's not really going to matter. Nobody's really going to give a crap about it anyways. And you just jump on it and you give it a try. I think David Bowie talked about it. I love the way he spoke about it. And I think he nailed it, which would make sense because he's David Bowie and the rest of us are not. And I think he said something along the lines of, as an artist, he knows he's working at his right limit when he feels like he's in deep enough water where he can't quite touch the bottom, but if he sinks below, his toes catch. And I think that's what it is. You know, you want to be just a little out of your depth. If you're super far out of your depth, that may be crippling. That might be too much and you'll lose control. You want to get a little bit outside of your depth. And the other thing that I would say, and always remember this, the first step to greatness is sucking. You have to suck, right? I mean, you do, right? You have to. You have what? You have 100 episodes of this podcast, maybe more. I'm not sure what your number is, right? If you were so fearful on episode one of what it was going to be at episode 100, you'd never do it, right? And so that's what it is. Hey, we all got to suck to be great. And I've never known somebody who didn't.
Beautiful. I love it. So if you're sucking right now, that means you're on your way to greatness.
First step to greatness, baby. You just got to keep putting one sucky footstep in front of the other.
Beautiful. And hopefully you're not sucked down by the quicksand of life while you're at it.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, so I think this is going to be a little bit more of a serious question, maybe, but hopefully you'll make light of it and we'll have a lot of fun. You know, a lot of people have the mindset that if you're artistic and you're creative and you're flamboyant, maybe, and you're, you know, in the arts, mm-hmm. that it's, you know, it's like where everybody's in poverty. So can you talk about cash flow and creating cash flow and the creation process of creating yourself as a successful business owner who does pay attention to the bottom line?
Yes. First thing I can say is it's called show business, not show fun. So it's a business, right? Hey, everybody creates from a different place. I have never ascribed to create from the starving artist mentality. And in fact, I actually think that's a bit of a, I won't say a fallacy, but that's put on others from those who are benefiting, right? So there's a reason. If they want you to be a starving artist, that means somebody else has got to be benefiting. And I've always looked at it as like, no, as an artist, as somebody that creates, that's why I did what I did. I did it myself, was because my value is just as much as anybody that's selling insurance or working in accounting. And I'm damn well going to fight for my share and looking to earn what it is that I think I'm contributing to society, what I'm contributing to humanity. That's only right. It's only right. And I think sometimes people hide behind this, oh, well, I'm not going to focus on the business. I'm just going to focus on the art because I'm a true artist. Hey, look, there are some people, I'm sure that they do that. I also have been around this business long enough to know that a lot of people use that as a crutch because they're afraid to face the other reality that's needed to help them succeed. And I don't care if you're a musician or a painter or a poet, you have every right to live just as comfortably as anybody else. And you, quite frankly, are adding value to the world. And so for me, I've always looked at it. I'm like, no, I'm adding value. And as long as I'm adding value, I always say this, right? When the audience leaves one of our shows, I want them, no matter what I'm charging them. And I think on Saturday nights at Improv Asylum, it's like $30 a ticket. It's a 200 seat theater. I want them leaving the theater going, that was cheap. That's what I want them to say. And then if I'm leading a corporate training or a corporate seminar or a speech and whatever my fee is that I'm charging them, I want them to walk out going, well, I would have paid double, right? Because now you're creating value and you're sure as hell getting value in return. And so this is a business. If you want to do this for a living, you need to treat it like a business.
Yeah, it's interesting. While you were speaking there, the words that were coming to me were justly compensated for the value that you offer into the world. And what I'm hearing is that you are claiming it. You are saying, this is what I want. This is what I want to create. And that you're creating the structure and the business model that is going to allow you to create what you want to create to feel justly compensated. So awesome. Thank you.
And I think you're right. And the other thing I would say is for anybody out there that's creating, and again, you've got to get good. You have to be able to give value. But at some point, I watch it all the time. People will way undercharge, like, oh, I'm only going to charge $5 or $7. What you're actually telling people is, oh, your stuff's not good. People actually want to pay more so that they can understand what it is that they're getting. So,
exactly. Well, from my perspective, because I actually mentor people, I often see the price point as a rite of passage for the person who is investing really in themselves and their own dream and their own vision. And I am giving them that opportunity to say yes to themselves at that level. And so if I underprice, then I'm robbing them essentially of the opportunity to say yes to themselves at that rite of passage level. So awesome. All right. Thank you. I'm glad we went down that little road. So the next thing I want to ask you, and we're very close to the end here, so I'm going to wrap it up shortly. But the next thing I want to ask you is, as a creative, often for me, I find I have so many choices. Like I could make art, I could do this, I could do that, I could perform, I can be on the podcast, I can do so many things. So do you have a method in your own life and business for knowing which thing to choose to energize next?
I tend to put three metrics in place for myself that helps me down the path. You know, there's no one certain way to do it, but I have these three metrics now that I mostly use. So if I'm going to do something, be it creatively or be it from a business standpoint, it's got to hit in one of these three buckets, right? It's either got to make me a lot of money. I got to pay the bills. So I got two teenage girls who are going to college soon, or maybe they're not. I don't know, but I still have to pay for them. So it's got to make me money, right? That's one. Or I have to love it. If I love it, that is reason enough to do something, right? I love mountain biking. It's never going to make me any money. But of course I should be doing that whenever I can because I love it. And the third thing, which I think is almost probably the most important one, is if I'm intellectually curious about it, and I have to really keep pursuing my intellectual curiosity, because you won't ever know if you love something or if it'll make you money if you cut out the intellectual curiosity part of what it is you do. And there are times where I'll try something because I'm intellectually curious. I'll do it for a while and I'll say, okay, great. I've gotten enough out of this. I'm not going to pursue it anymore. And yet now I know. But if I were to cut that out of my life, then it wouldn't open me up to discovering the things I love or maybe the things that could make me more money.
Yes, and I love that. Beautiful. All right. Well, we have one final question for you, and that is, what do you do to celebrate when you have accomplished something that you set out to do?
I go on a week-long bender and you don't see me again and I end up somewhere naked in a hotel in Southeast Asia. No, I don't know. I think for me, and oddly enough, a lot of people who perform, matter of fact, the majority of the people I've ever worked with, we technically come up as introverts. And I think that's often misunderstood. An introvert isn't somebody that can't communicate, that can't be entertaining or funny. Of course we can. And that's what we do on stage. I think what it is a lot of us, because we're on stage so much or we're in front of people so much, and this could also be true of anybody leading a company, right? Mm-hmm. You're on stage, you're in front of all of these people. I get my power from, I got to disconnect, right? I've got to be, you know, I like to just do my own thing. I like to go run in the woods with the dog, those kinds of things. So I think that's number one. And then number two, food. Treat yourself to a good meal. Oh my God. That's like, I don't know, maybe it's an age thing. I'm just getting older. I'm always like, oh yeah, the things went really well. How about some Indian? And you got to make sure, and whatever it is, you got to pat yourself on the back. You have to acknowledge it and then you move on. You acknowledge what you did, but keep moving.
Beautiful. I love that. Well, I thought you were going to say Southie. When you started with Southeast Asia, I thought you were going to be in like a crappy hotel room in Southie, which most people around the world aren't going to get that joke because they're not from Boston. But I know that
if you find yourself in a crappy hotel room in Southie, you have had one hell of a bender.
And you're probably not celebrating. All right, Norm. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so glad that you came, and I hope people got a chuckle as well as some illumination out of our time with you. And I am really grateful for you being here. So listeners, we love feedback. Please let us know what you thought of today's show or send in questions or guest suggestions to listeners at menonpurposepodcast.com. We might even give you a shout out on the show. Thanks for tuning in. Keep your ears open. And remember, you are magnificent men.
Thanks for tuning in, downloading, and listening. Be sure to review and rate Men on Purpose on Apple Podcasts and share with other men who can benefit from today's episode. Men on Purpose is the premier podcast series for informing, activating, and inspiring the leader who has made his money and knows now is the time to make his mark. We welcome your feedback and guest suggestions and invite you to subscribe to our mailing list to be notified of each new episode at menonpurposepodcast.com.